You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 25. This minute opens with Yannick saying, "All right, take us around, we'll use that as our point of entry," and ends with him saying, "Going through nice and slow." This minute is primarily just gorgeous terrain shots of LV-223. Curiously, the music track switches from A Planet to Weyland's theme. The eerie tone works, but songs are supposed to mean things. Technically, you shouldn't use a theme intended for a specific character when said character is not there. This bridge was based on Ron Cobb's original design, which was deemed too expensive for Alien. I learned that from Adam Savage. I've been digging through old reviews of Prometheus, and he mentioned it on his podcast. It's interesting to see the initial reception. It was such a hot topic at the time. Adam didn't like the film, although he seemed much more excited about Alien Covenant. You should check out his coverage of Covenant on his YouTube channel, Tested. It's some fascinating behind-the-scenes stuff. Much better than what was on the Blu-ray. I forgot to mention, in the previous minute, Ford says,
"Peak, portside, whoa, 52,000. Makes Everest look like a baby brother."
I assume she means feet, which means we still haven't totally converted to the metric system in the future. 52,000 feet is about 15 kilometres. Mount Everest is a little over 29,000 feet, or 8 kilometres, meaning it just penetrates the troposphere, which is between 6 to 20 kilometres above sea level. I mention all this because I think it's pretty amazing that you can have structures that massive and they still only just scrape the lower atmosphere. Chance and Ravel declare that there are traces of metal but no radio or heat sources, to which Milburn smugly says, "Nobody's home." He's also holding a mug, probably not advisable in a moving vehicle which is making its way through a bumpy atmosphere. Even down to these minor details, the sheer unprofessionalism of this crew is evident. Silently, Shaw seems to give him a look before setting her sights back to the planet. She won't let him ruin the moment for her. Ironically, Milburn will be the most excitable when they get to the pyramid. It's his undoing, if anything. I like Rafe Spall. He's charismatic, and I think he does a great job with what he's been given. But his character doesn't make any sense. Why was he offended about this mission? Why is he glad that there are no living beings there? And then why does he do a complete 180 and become like an excitable child when he sees the Hammerpede, to the point that he throws all caution to the wind? Maybe as we venture further into this film we can watch him more closely and see how he evolves, but I feel there is a real dissonance between what Rafe wanted to do and what the script, or Ridley, asked of him. I think Milburn is most himself when he is a sweet, optimistic, curious guy, and those elements gel well with the plot and his character arc. But this smug, snarky side doesn't make sense. If they absolutely needed this aspect of the character to remain, the only potential way to play it is if he was so eager to please Fifield that he was just taking his side to win him over, like, "Oh wow, you guys are on a mission to find aliens? That's so cool." And then he looks at Fifield's grumpy face. I mean, sounds mega lame. You guys are dumb. There. We just gave him about twice as much character development as the film bothered to do. I'm going to add that to the list of flaws.
"There is nothing in the desert, and no man needs nothing."
"What was that?"
"Just something from a film I like."
I mentioned way back in one of the first few episodes that this was going to be filmed in Morocco. The sunny desert location would have better served this quote. I mean, it works anyway, but I think initially they wanted Prometheus to visually parallel Lawrence of Arabia. It was nice seeing the Arabian scenes in Ridley Scott and Darius Wolski's latest collaboration, All the Money in the World. Sadly, those scenes were very brief, but I've always had an appreciation for the magnificence of the desert. It's a shame that as arid as Australia is, we don't have a lot of true desert terrain. There's a lot of shrubbery, which is why, ironically enough, they had to film Mad Max Fury Road in Namibia and not here. I think maybe Lawrence of Arabia or Tarsem Singh's film The Cell and The Fall are movies that really cemented my love for this kind of environment. I love that, well, the colour palette, but also that negative space, just the sheer vastness of it. I love it. This exchange between David and Ford, another great scene. And again, a moment I can relate to. I use fiction as a means of understanding the world and connecting to it. I often make these esoteric references, forgetting that people around me might not understand what I'm talking about. I often quote movies or books because they sum up how I'm feeling or sums up the situation I'm in. Everything I experience is framed through the prism of fiction. It helps guide me through life. David is as much a part of my identity as Lawrence is a part of David's. At this point, David is still positioned as our protagonist. We have spent the most time with him. We have seen the world from his perspective, and when I first watched this movie, I was already way too attached to him. Boy, did I have some issues to work through when I saw Covenant. Anyway, this is known as a false protagonist or a decoy protagonist. Sometimes this character is established as our hero, only for them to die very early in the story or they turn out to be the antagonist. In this particular context, placing David as the protagonist serves a few functions. It allows us to find the antagonist more convincing. Heroes are often boring because they are reactionary. They are trying to survive or maintain the status quo or stop the bad guy. This is a fairly straightforward and relatable, and perhaps even default motivation. But a story is only as good as its villain because the villain is the one who sets the plot in motion. They are the one who is all about action rather than reaction. They've generally suffered some injustice or they see something wrong with the world or their place in it, and have decided to be the change they want to see in the world. If we cannot relate to or understand our antagonists, the rest of the plot often falls down. Not always, but this is often the case. And this is why, above all other aspects of this film, Fassbender's performance was universally praised. He imbued this character with such pathos. He has such incredible control over his body language and facial expressions. But beyond that, his function within the script is clever, because he is that false protagonist, and he's one of the most coherent characters in the entire plot. This is kind of another callback to Alien. We are led to assume Captain Dallas is the hero until Ripley takes his place. Now, Shaw is clearly established as the protagonist early on, but her role is quite downplayed, especially in comparison to David. What makes him unique amongst antagonists is that he's not entirely in control of his actions. Ultimately, he is instructed by Wayland. It's the precise means by which he enacts his creator's wishes that makes him an antagonist. This further serves to make him ambiguous, and many people left the movie with a sense that David's future was uncertain, that he could possibly be redeemed now he was free and with Elizabeth, or he could become a villain. It's kind of 50-50. In this moment, he has a kind of faraway look in his eyes as he says the quote, and then turns to Ford and answers in such a benign way. It's a rare moment of serenity and honesty from him. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by a Minute on Facebook. Feel free to leave a rating on iTunes or Facebook, or support me on Ko-fi.